You're listening to the North American Francophone Podcast, hosted in English by Claire-Marie Brisson and proudly recorded in Charlottesville, Virginia. There's a motto that's used by many Francophone North Americans. You may attribute it especially to Quebec. It's « Je me souviens » or « I remember ». And it's precisely the feeling that I feel when I've talked to people from Woonsocket, Rhode Island. I had the pleasure of dialoguing with Robert Gumlaw, who is the president and on the board of directors of the American French Genealogical Society, and I also talked to Calvin Fox, who started up Francophone Rhode Island, an online presence that talks about Rhode Island's French-speaking past, present, and hopefully future. Calvin is a student at Concordia University in Montreal, and I'm going to present the two conversations that I had to you here in this podcast today. They're wonderful, and they follow one after another. The first one's going to be Robert, and the second one is going to be Calvin. We talk a bit about Woonsocket's role in Francophone North America and in New England as well, and then we talk a little bit about how their experiences as Franco-North Americans have impacted their own research and work to preserve the Francophone legacy in Rhode Island. Enjoy! Joining me today is Robert Gumlaw, the president on the board of directors of the American French Genealogical Society. Robert, how are you today?
I'm very well. How are you, Claire Marie?
Doing just fine. Thank you again so much for joining us on the North American Francophone Podcast. So my listeners are from different parts of North America and, of course, the rest of the world. Could you share a bit about why the American French Genealogical Society was established in 1978 in Woonsocket and what it does today?
Certainly. The American French Genealogical Society was founded in, actually, Pawtucket. It was founded in 1978 as a club, part of the Lafoyer Club in Pawtucket. It was founded by a group of about 10 people and quickly became about 80 members by the end of the year. There was a very large French-American population from Canada who were in Rhode Island and looking for their roots. In 1989, the club was so large that they were looking for a home because their materials were expanding, their group was expanding, so they decided to try to find another place to store everything and have their own space. On Thanksgiving weekend in November of 1989, they moved to the First Universalist Church in Woonsocket, where they were able to rent a room and rent space, which was able to house their growing collection. In 2006-2007, the church was coming up for sale. The AFGS asked for the right of first refusal to buy the building, and fortunately, the members had started a building fund years before, so we were able to purchase the building from the former First Universalist Church in Woonsocket, and this is our home today. So we went from about 3,000 square feet of space to 19,000.
That's an incredible size.
It was a very incredible find. We were very lucky.
Absolutely. And so you're saying that there were a lot of people who wanted to connect with their American, French, or maybe French-Canadian heritage and roots. And I looked up in 1920, Woonsocket was nearly 70% French-speaking. Now, what does that look like today?
In 1980, there was a study done, and 70% of Woonsocket had French-Canadian ancestry. Of course, the majority had come between the 1880s and early 1920s, so since then, the generations have been American and intermarried with other groups in the area. But there's still a large population in and around Woonsocket that can claim French-Canadian roots. We don't hear French as much as it once was. There are no longer French newspapers like there were at one time. But there are groups like ours that still carry on the French-Canadian tradition. We've had speakers from Canada. We've had musical groups from Canada. So there is an interest in our French-Canadian heritage in the area. And we carry it on with a biannual publication, Je me souviens, which means I remember.
Also the motto of Quebec. So I see that there's a very large connection still with Quebec and your community. Were there other sources of French migration to the city, or was it specifically French Canadians coming to Woonsocket and settling there?
The majority is from Quebec, definitely. But there was a smaller group of Acadian settlers that settled in Rhode Island and southern Massachusetts. There was also a group of workers that were brought over from France and Belgium that settled the area. But that's a much smaller group compared to the group from Quebec. We have many that still have relatives in Quebec and visit often. They also take bus tours of Quebec. There's another one scheduled for this summer. So the area definitely has a strong connection with French Canada.
And I know that there are a lot of cities in New England that are connected to this history. For example, Lewiston, Maine, Biddeford. And do you feel like you are also connected to those cities in the United States or not so much?
We are, because there is a group that is trying to draw interest throughout New England and Quebec. And it's part of the Francophone American group. They have people in Biddeford, Lewiston, Manchester, New Hampshire, Woonsocket, Rhode Island, Burlington, Vermont, that are trying to generate some more interest so we can share the wealth, so to speak, as far as the French-Canadian heritage with those in Quebec.
And that's great. And I know that the American French Genealogical Society also tries to share the wealth with its resources. And when I was on your website, I saw that you have an online library database, and it looks like it's for members. What could listeners hope to access on that online library database?
Well, on the online library database, it's called the Members Only Library. We have copied some of our publications. We have got permission to copy other publications. On our online library, we have our Jules Messuvien, all the copies up until the most recent are available. We have the former Acadian Cultural Society publication called Le Relève Acadien. Those are available. We have 30 volumes of Our French Ancestors, also called the La Forest Collection. We have the Tanguay Dictionary. We have the Seigneurial System in Quebec. We have 19 videos available of some of the classes we run about monthly or bi-monthly from fall through spring. We have classes available and open to the public. And we have 19 of those recorded and edited that are up available for our members to view. Those are anything from creating oral histories, the French-Canadian and the American Revolution.
So the videos that are on the online library database probably represent a little bit of what somebody could experience if they were to visit the American French Genealogical Society in person. What other types of events or resources are available at the American French Genealogical Society on site?
On site, we have over 20,000 volumes of repertoires, history books, church histories, biographies, family books, which are collections of various family names that have been researched by others, and those are made available. We have a very large obituary collection, which was the first project started by the AFGS, and the obituaries start from about 1979 up until current. And those are clippings from newspapers in and around Rhode Island and Massachusetts are the majority. We also have some Canadian newspapers which have been clipped and saved and indexed, and it's searchable by name. We have a very large headstone database. There's over 100 cemeteries that have been photographed and indexed, and those are searchable by surname. We have a large collection of the Woonsocket Call newspaper available. We have a very large collection. We have over 4,000 microfilms. We have computers available with subscriptions to Ancestry.com. We are a family history affiliate library connected with the Family History Library in Salt Lake City, Utah. So we can gather information from all over the world, not just from Canada.
Amazing. And I think that maybe if somebody is trying to build their family tree, it would be a great place to start, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would, especially if they are from New England and if they have French Canadians, definitely, because that is our forte. We do have a fille à marier and a fille de droit certificate program where people, if they have researched their lines back to a king's daughter or a fille à marier, we can verify the line, and then we issue a certificate and a pin, and those are available. You can learn more about that project via our website, afgs.org.
Excellent. Excellent. And I'm sure that many people who are maybe in New England or close by will hopefully stop by after hearing this. And Robert, I wondered if you have your own French American or French Canadian story that you could share with the listeners. I know that they would be delighted to hear it as well.
Well, I have a mixed ancestry. I am half Acadian. My mother's family is Acadian. My father's family is French Canadian and also Irish. My French Canadian changed the name. Many might be wondering about my Gumlaw surname. That is a name that was changed in upstate New York back in the 1850s. The name was Gamelin. Now, if you say Gamelin in French, you can kind of understand where Gumlaw comes from. There are many French Canadian surnames that in that area of New York, if you find a surname that ends in A-W, chances are it was once French Canadian, like Bouchard for Boucher, or Amlaw for Hamelin, and Gumlaw for Gamelin.
I would not have known that without talking to you, and I'm sure that my listeners are learning something new hearing that. Maybe they're going to discover their own French-Canadian heritage. And it's interesting that you mentioned that there were so many connections with the Irish, and that also is the story of my family. My mother's side of the family is Irish-Canadian, and my father's side is French-Canadian. So I think that that pairing is fairly common.
Mm-hmm. Well, as the generations lived in America, at one time it was French Canadians marrying other French Canadians. The next generation, it was French Canadians marrying Irish or Italian, as long as they were Catholic. And by the third or fourth generation, pretty much anything goes as far as relationships.
Well, thank you so much, Robert. I really appreciated having this conversation with you. If people want to find out more about the American French Genealogical Society, where would be the best place that they could contact you or visit the website online?
The website online is afgs.org. We also are on Facebook, the American French Genealogical Society, and we are also on Twitter at AMFRGENSOC. So any of those, we have a lot more information to share. Our website does have quite a bit of information, including contact information. If you want to send us a note or send me a note, we're an all-volunteer group. But we love what we do.
Thank you again so very much. Merci beaucoup.
De rien. Thank you very much.
I'm talking today with Calvin Fox, creator of Francophone RI and a proud Franco-American. Calvin describes himself as someone who's trying to make his grandparents proud as he works to highlight Franco-American culture. Calvin, thanks for joining us.
I'm happy to join you. I'm very excited.
So I see deep family ties to this subject and your project, and I imagine there to be a continuation of the same feelings in regards to your presence on Twitter and other social media networks. So my first question is directed at your Twitter. What motivated you to create Francophone RI?
Well, I think there was a lot of things that I felt growing up, and now that I'm older, I kind of had the ability to create a Twitter page and a platform where I guess you can kind of highlight Franco-American culture and news. But I would say what inspired me was definitely my family. I think growing up, just hearing stories of my grandparents and, you know, my aunts used to sing to me in French. So just hearing, you know, the stories of my grandparents coming over from Quebec was making me wonder as a kid, what does all this mean? Like, where does my family come from?
And do you actually know where your family came from in Quebec? Is that something that you've researched? Or do you know kind of broadly the story that your family came from Quebec to the United States?
My family timeline it's a bit strange. My grandparents had five kids, and my grandmother had my mother at 45. So all my other aunts and great aunts were older, and all my cousins are like a lot older than me. So I was lucky enough to actually meet my great aunt before she passed away. She kind of told me a little bit about the family history, about how my family owns and has a farm and here in Quebec. And then originally, from what I've heard from my family is originally from Compton, which is up further north, and it's a lot of farmland. And then from what I heard from my family, they ended up coming to the U.S. just because the farm started collapsing and the economy here was collapsing at the time. So they went to the U.S. to work in the mill industry.
So do you still have family on both sides of the border, or do you have most of your family in the United States at this point?
I would say I have most of the family in the U.S., but I do have some distant relatives in Canada. That's been pretty exciting. My goal is to eventually try to really come in contact with them and, you know, try to connect with them at some point.
And personally, do you share your time between Canada and the U.S., or do you feel like because you're trying to research this history, you feel like you have to go to Canada more? Do you have to go to Quebec more? Or do you kind of stay more in the United States?
Actually, lucky enough, I just recently moved to Quebec, so I feel like I have the luxury of both. I'm a college student at Concordia University here in Montreal. I'm lucky enough to be able to head out somewhere and, you know, actually try to find the location through whether it's like genealogy or something that my family told me.
That's great. And so maybe some of your colleagues and friends at Concordia, how do they see your project? Are they excited about what you're doing? Are they supportive? Do they have questions for you?
There's a lot of people, I think, here, at least in Quebec, a lot of people don't realize how many Franco-Americans and Quebec descendants are in New England. I think that it shocks a lot of people hearing that there's a French language and culture outside of Quebec. So a lot of them are definitely interested. A lot of them are always, you know, wondering what does Franco-American mean. So I think that's super cool to ignite questions in people here and kind of, you know, generate a learning process.
Do you feel connected to any other Francophone areas of North America, or do you feel the greatest connection to Rhode Island?
I guess Rhode Island, just because my family and I'm from there. But I think anywhere where there's Francophone presence, I guess in a way I feel connected to, like, because, you know, we're all, whether it's Louisiana or Quebec or, you know, in New England, I think, you know, we all have that same kind of history. We all have the same thing in common. So I guess the answer to that question is a little bit of both.
Speaking a little bit more historically, in 1920, Woonsocket specifically was nearly 70% Francophone. And what does that look like today? What do the Francophone communities, or at least Franco-American communities in Rhode Island, look like? Do they speak French as much?
French, it's definitely died off, but you can tell there's still presence there. So the older generation is bilingual. It's not spoken like it was like 70 years ago, obviously. A lot of that has changed. Very few, every now and then, you can kind of get younger people who are bilingual and into it. You know, my goal here is to kind of bring it back and kind of show people that the history of the Franco-Americans, because even though people don't speak the language, there are still a lot of people who are Franco-American who have descended from Quebec. So the only thing that's different now is just the absence of language.
One of the main goals of this podcast is actually to underscore that idea, is to say that Franco-Americans don't have to be French-speaking. There still is a connection to that community. And so do you think that the people that you encounter in New England and in Rhode Island feel that way too?
100%. I think that's a really good point to make, because every now and then I meet people who are, you know, on both sides. There will be some people, the only way you can, you know, keep the culture is if you keep the language. And then there'll be people who are, it's not necessarily about the language. It's about actually caring about it, realizing the culture. I think that a lot of people there, if they don't speak French, there's definitely French presence in terms of whether it's food or, you know, history or churches, whatever it may be. The culture is there. It's just not always in through the way of language.
Actually, in Rhode Island, specifically in Woonsocket, there's the American French Historical Society and the Museum of Work and Culture. And I feel like these two institutions are really trying to preserve New England's French heritage and New England's French culture. Have you had some interactions with them, and how do they represent French Canadian and French American history?
Yes, and I think they do a fantastic job with representing the French Canadian Franco-American community. I think, you know, they do a really good job in terms of preserving history and telling the story. I think it's really important to highlight the huge presence that Franco-Americans had in Woonsocket and obviously across, you know, North America. But they do a fantastic job at almost bringing history to life. You know, some of the things from the mills, and you have, you know, things like the three-story houses, and they show you all these different types of things that were very prevalent in that time. And while also showing those things, they actually have it in English and in French. So, you know, I think it's a very important part of the community, and they do an amazing job with keeping that.
I just recently discovered that in late 2019, there's now a route that's called the, I believe it's the Franco route in New England, and it connects cities like Woonsocket, Manchester, Biddeford, Lewiston together. And it spans more than 460 miles, and it shows that there was a huge presence of French-speaking people that came into New England. And do you think most of these people came to the United States for the same reason that your family did, to work in the mills, to escape the economy in Quebec especially?
That's probably a big reason. I would say, you know, there was probably some people who were also just interested in maybe trying out something different for a little while. But I think, at least from the research that I've done and stories that I've heard, for what I know, like my grandmother worked in a mill. She made surgical cloth. And then my grandfather actually had his own business, and he made street signs. And I think there was probably at the time better outlook in terms of jobs and financial future here rather than there.
A couple of episodes ago, we talked to David Vermette, who wrote A Distinct Alien Race, about the reception of Franco-Americans and French Canadians in the United States. Do you think that there still exists some kind of tension or bias against people who are trying to protect this heritage? Or do you think that now it's become kind of a part of New England's culture?
Well, that's a good question. I think it's kind of hard to say. I haven't met anyone who is too opposed to it. I'm sure that, you know, with every, I guess, culture and every, like any type of immigrant story, there'll always be people who are a little opposed to it. But I think for the most part, people are openly accepting about it. And I think, at least at this point, in my opinion, I think it's just become such a fabric of New England that a lot of people, if they don't necessarily understand everything, they understand what the Franco-American culture and history is in New England.
And so, as somebody who grew up in New England, what is your hope for the future of French in Rhode Island and maybe more broadly in the United States?
I'm slowly in the very beginning stages of trying to work to create a bilingual newspaper for Woonsocket again, where like there'll be local news topics and obviously topics that are happening in Quebec and throughout the U.S. in French first and then English second. But I think it would be nice just to see people more invested in the language to maybe show like they want to learn it and maybe speak it a little bit more. Because I think a lot of times the older generation that does speak French still is almost afraid to speak French because a lot of the younger generations don't necessarily know it. But I think if we inspire, I guess, the youth to kind of ask questions about where they came from and, you know, their history in terms of culture, maybe in some way like a newspaper or, you know, online presence can inspire them to want to learn the language of French and connect with the older people and so forth.
Yeah, that's a great vision for the future. And I'm sure that my listeners, after they've heard this interview, will really want to connect with you on social media and find where you are. So how can they best find you online?
You can best find me online by just my Twitter page, Francophone Rhode Island, and you can just contact me through there. So that's pretty much where I'm at right now.
Fantastic. And I will actually link Francophone Rhode Island to this interview for my listeners. You can find it right in the app wherever you're listening right now. Thank you again, Calvin, for joining us today, and we're really excited about your project.
Thank you so much.